The next day they headed inland again, a vast low swale where ferns and hydrangeas and wild orchids lived on in ashen effigies which the wind hadn't yet reached. Their progress was a torture. In 2 days, when they came out upon a road, he set the bag down and sat bent over with his arms crossed at his chest and coughed till he could cough no more. 2 more days, and they may have traveled 10 miles. They crossed the river, and a short ways on, they came to a crossroads. Down country, a storm had passed over the isthmus and leveled the dead black trees from east to west, like weeds in the floor of a stream. Here they camped, and when he lay down, he knew that he could go no further, and that this was the place where he would die. The boy sat watching him, his eyes welling. "Oh, Papa," he said. He watched him come through the grass and kneel with a cup of water he'd fetched. There was light all about him. He took the cup and drank and lay back. They had for food a single tin of peaches, but he made the boy eat it, and he wouldn't take any. "I can't," he said. "It's all right."
"I'll save your half."
"Okay. You save it until tomorrow." He took the cup and moved away, and when he moved, the light moved with him. He'd wanted to try and make a tent out of the tarp, but the man wouldn't let him. He said that he didn't want anything covering him. He lay watching the boy at the fire. He wanted to be able to see. "Look around you," he said. "There is no prophet in the earth's long chronicle who's not honored here today. Whatever form you spoke of, you were right." The boy thought he smelled wet ash on the wind. He went up the road and came dragging back a piece of plywood from the roadside trash, and he drove sticks into the ground with a rock and made of the plywood a rickety lean-to, but in the end it didn't rain. He left the flare pistol and took the revolver with him, and he scoured the countryside for anything to eat, but he came back empty-handed. The man took his hand, wheezing.
"You need to go on," he said. "I can't go with you. You need to keep going. You don't know what might be down the road. We were always lucky. You'll be lucky again, you'll see. Just go. It's all right."
"I can't."
"It's all right. This has been a long time coming. Now, it's here. Keep going south. Do everything the way we did it."
"You're gonna be okay, Papa. You have to."
"No, I'm not. Keep the gun with you, at all times. You need to find the good guys, but you can't take any chances. No chances. Do you hear?"
"I want to be with you."
"You can't. Please, you can't. You have to carry the fire."
"I don't know how to."
"Yes, you do."
"Is it real, the fire?"
"Yes, it is."
"Where is it? I don't know where it is."
"Yes, you do. It's inside you. It was always there. I can see it."
"Just take me with you, please."
"I can't. Please, Papa, I can't. I can't hold my son dead in my arms. I thought I could, but I can't."
"You said you wouldn't ever leave me."
"I know. I'm sorry. You have my whole heart. You always did. You're the best guy." You always were. If I'm not here, you can still talk to me. You can talk to me, and I'll talk to you. You'll see.
Will I hear you?
Yes, you will. You have to make it like talk that you imagine, and you'll hear me. You have to practice. Just don't give up. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
I'm really scared, Papa.
I know. But you'll be okay. You are going to be lucky. I know you are. I've got to stop talking. I'm gonna start coughing again.
It's okay, Papa. You don't have to talk. It's okay.
He went down the road as far as he dared, and then he came back. His father was still asleep. He sat with him under the plywood and watched him. He closed his eyes and talked to him, and he kept his eyes closed and listened. Then he tried again. He woke in the darkness, coughing softly. He lay listening. The boy sat by the fire, wrapped in a blanket, watching him. Drip of water, a fading light. Dreams that encroached upon the waking world. The dripping was in the cave. The light was a candle which the boy bore in a ring stick of beaten copper. The wax dripped on the stones. Tracks of unknown creatures in the mortified Lois. In that cold corridor, they had reached the point of no return, which was measured from the first solely by the light they carried with them.
Do you remember that little boy, Papa?
Yes. I remember him.
Do you think that he's all right, that little boy?
Oh, yes. I think he's all right.
Do you think he was lost?
No. I don't think he was lost.
I'm scared that he was lost.
I think he's all right.
But who will find him if he's lost? Who will find the little boy?
Goodness will find the little boy. It always has. It will again.
He slept close to his father that night and held him. But when he woke in the morning, his father was cold and stiff. He sat there a long time weeping, and then he got up and walked out through the woods to the road. When he came back, he knelt beside his father and held his cold hand and said his name over and over again. He stayed 3 days, and then he walked out to the road, and he looked down the road, and he looked back the way they'd come. Someone was coming. He started to turn and go back into the woods, but he didn't. He just stood in the road and waited, the pistol in his hand. He'd piled all the blankets on his father, and he was cold, and he was hungry. The man that hove into view and stood there looking at him was dressed in a gray and yellow ski parka. He carried a shotgun upside down over his shoulder on a braided leather lanyard, and he wore a nylon bandolier filled with shells for the gun. A veteran of old skirmishes, bearded, scarred across his cheek, and the bone stoven and the one eye wandering. When he spoke, his mouth worked imperfectly, and when he smiled,
"Where's the man you were with?"
"He died."
"Was that your father?"
"Yes, he was my papa."
"I'm sorry."
"I don't know what to do."
"I think you should come with me."
"Are you one of the good guys?"
The man pulled back the hood from his face. His hair was long and matted. He looked at the sky, as if there were anything there to be seen. He looked at the boy.
"Yeah," he said, "I'm one of the good guys.
Why don't you put the pistol away?
I'm not supposed to let anyone take the pistol, no matter what.
I don't want your pistol. I just don't want you pointing it at me.
Okay.
Where's your stuff?
We don't have much stuff.
Have you got a sleeping bag?
No.
What have you got? Some blankets?
My papa's wrapped in them.
Show me. The boy didn't move. The man watched him. He squatted on one knee and swung the shotgun up from under his arm and stood it in the road and leaned on the forestock. The shotgun shells and the loops of the bandolier were hand-loaded and the ends sealed with candle wax. He smelled of wood smoke.
"Look," he said, "you got two choices here. There was some discussion about whether to even come after you at all. You can stay here with your papa and die, or you can go with me. If you stay, you need to keep out of the road. I don't know how you made it this far, but you should go with me. You'll be all right."
"How do I know you're one of the good guys?"
"You don't. You'll have to take a shot."
"Are you carrying the fire?"
"Am I what?"
"Carrying the fire."
"You're kind of weirded out, aren't you?"
"No."
"Just a little."
"Yeah."
"That's okay."
"So are you?"
"What, carrying the fire?"
"Yes."
"Yeah, we are."
"Do you have any kids?"
"We do."
"Do you have a little boy?"
"We have a little boy, and we have a little girl."
"How old is he?"
"He's about your age, maybe a little older."
"And you didn't eat them?"
"No."
"You don't eat people?"
"No, we don't eat people."
"And I can go with you?"
"Yes, you can."
"Okay, then."
"Okay."
They went into the woods and the man squatted and looked at the gray and wasted figure under the tilted sheet of plywood.
"Are these all the blankets you have?"
"Yes."
"Is that your suitcase?"
"Yes."
He stood. He looked at the boy.
"Why don't you go back out to the road and wait for me? I'll bring everything."
"What about my papa?"
"What about him?"
"We can't just leave him here."
"Yes, we can."
"I don't want people to see him."
"There's no one to see him."
"Will you cover him up with one of the blankets?"
"Yes, I will."
"Go on now."
"Okay."
He waited in the road, and when the man came out of the woods, he was carrying the suitcase, and he had the blankets over his shoulder. He sorted through them and handed one to the boy.
"Here," he said, "wrap this around you. You're cold."
The boy tried to hand him the pistol, but he wouldn't take it.
"You hold on to that," he said.
"Okay."
"You know how to shoot it?"
"Yes."
"Okay."
"What about my papa?"
"There's nothing else to be done."
"I think I want to say goodbye to him."
"Will you be all right?"
"Yes."
"Well, go ahead. I'll wait for you."
He walked back into the woods and knelt beside his father. He was wrapped in a blanket as the man had promised, and the boy didn't uncover him. But he sat beside him, and he was crying, and he couldn't stop. He cried for a long time.
"I'll talk to you every day," he whispered, "and I won't forget, no matter what."
Then he rose and turned and walked back out to the road. The woman, when she saw him, put her arms around him and held him.
"Oh," she said, "I am so glad to see you."
She would talk to him sometimes about God. He tried to talk to God, but the best thing was to talk to his father. And he did talk to him, and he didn't forget. The woman said that was all right. "The breath of God," she said, "is his breath yet, though it pass from man to man through all of time." Once, there were brook trout in the streams in the mountains. You could see them standing in the amber current where the white edges of their fins wimpled softly in the flow. They smelled of moss in your hand, polished and muscular and torsional. On their backs were vermiculate patterns that were maps of the world in its becoming, maps and mazes of a thing which could not be put back, not be made right again. In the deep glens where they lived, all things were older than man, and they hummed of mystery.